K-Star, have you established communication with my sister yet?
Negative, sir. Primary Valdoria doesn't respond to any channel we've opened to the racer.
Get me through to her,
Kurge said.
I don't want her shooting down Cox's ship.
He still didn't know how Jabriel Cox had escaped his prison cell, but Kurge wanted him alive. This heir of the Aristo Emperor, he couldn't interrogate a dead man. K-Star spoke again.
Sir, Cox's flyer is taking off.
He must be desperate, Tehota said. He has to know we have a cordon set up.
Maybe he doesn't care,
Kurge said.
In his place, wouldn't you prefer death to recapture?
What the hell?
K-Star said.
Sir, Cox has engaged the star drive on his ship. Primary Valdoria is bringing her inversion drives online as well. Saints almighty, they're trying to invert from standing still,
Kurge scowled.
K-Star, get me that line to my sister now. I don't want her pursuing Cox. If you can't reach her, cripple her racer.
Bad enough he might lose his prize prisoner if Cox engaged the star drive of his ship while it was at rest on the surface of the planet. Kurge had no intention of letting his sister and heir risk her life to stop him.
Sir,
K-Star's voice sounded odd.
Both ships just melted out of real space.
Kurge stopped with Tehota at his side.
Repeat that last.
Both ships tried to invert, K-Star said. They disappeared, dissipated into nothing.
Kurge stared at Tehota. Speaking into his calm, he said,
Find them.
But even as he spoke, he saw his thoughts mirrored in Tehota's broad face. To activate its star drive, a ship had to be traveling at near light speed, far from the gravity well of a planet. As far as Kurge knew, no ship that had tried otherwise had survived. Part 1. Exile. 356 ASC on the Imperial calendar. 379 EG on the Ubian calendar. AD 2259 on the Gregorian calendar. IE 5262 on the Ruby calendar. About 6275 on the Iotic calendar. Chapter 1. They spent their first evening of exile staring at the sky of their new world, watching the sea of stars. While the long sunset died, the two of them sat on the edge of a cliff, a laser carbine across their knees, the mountains rolling away at their feet. In the initial flush of their escape, Saz Valdoria had felt a rush of optimism. As a primary, one of Imperial Space Command's highest-ranking officers, she well knew the odds against evading a planet-wide cordon set up by ISC. That she and Jabriel had succeeded exhilarated her. But as daylight waned, her adrenaline-provoked rush of euphoria faded. She glanced at Jabriel Cox, suddenly unsure what to say to this man who, as of 1 hour ago, was her husband. Jabriel turned to her.
Perhaps we should go back to the cave, take shelter for the night.
All right. She stood up with him, holding the carbine. A warning entered her mind. Alert. What's the problem? Saz asked. Bioelectrodes in her neurons converted the thought into binary and sent it to the optics-based node in her spine, using fiber-optic threads that networked her body. Something is coming, her node thought. As Saz turned to the forest behind them, a map appeared in her mind. Her node accessed her optic nerve and the map jumped out in front of her, a translucent image superimposed on the landscape. It had few details, given their scant data on this primitive wilderness, but a red triangle blinked in one corner. Estimated distance, 12 to 15 meters. Weight, 200 to 300 kilograms, her node thought. Predicted trajectory shown. A blue line appeared on the map. Unaware of her silent communication, Jabriel stepped toward the trees. When Saz laid her hand on his arm, he froze, and she glimpsed an image in his mind, herself, sitting on a bed, smiling as she held out her hand to him. Then he flushed and raised his mental barriers. His mind became a fortress, unreadable and closed. Disconcerted, yet also flattered, Saz pulled back her hand. Something is coming toward us. He indicated the carbine.
Can that deal with it?
Possibly, but I'd prefer to conserve the charge. On her map, the red triangle stopped, then moved again, this time away from them. Path cleared. Her node thought. Saz glanced at Jabriel, tried to relax. We can go now. They entered the forest together. Although it was dark under the canopy of foliage, her enhanced optics let her see in both the infrared and the ultraviolet. When she toggled her IR, the landscape smoldered in dim reds, and Jabril glowed in the colors of flame. The trees resembled giant palms 100 meters tall. They whispered, crackling and shushing, their crowns forming an intertwined roof, with huge stiff fronds that clattered together or floated to the ground. Fragrances drifted in the air, the delicate, bittersweet smells of unknown foliage and loamy soil. Jabril stumbled on an exposed root.
"Soskany," he said, "can you see where we're going?"
She stopped, surprised to hear her full first name, and he plowed into her. Her nod toggled the hydraulics that augmented her skeleton and muscles, and she caught her balance with enhanced speed. Jabril pulled away from her, a flush of heat showing on his face.
"My apology."
"Saz," she answered.
"What did you say?"
She started to repeat Saz, then surprised herself and said, "Soshone." He was looking lower than her head, unable to judge the exact location of her face in the dark.
"I don't understand."
"Only my parents call me Soskany," she said. "Everyone else calls me Saz."
"Who is Soshone?"
"It's a nickname my family used when I was young," she hesitated. "You can use it, too, if you'd like."
A charming smile lit his face.
"I would like that."
His boyish expression startled her. Faced with his prodigious intellect and high-born manner, she tended to forget he was only 23, less than half her age. She kept her hale, hearty youth, courtesy of biotech and good genes. As they started to walk again, a high-pitched cry undulated in the night. Another followed, then others, fading with distance. Leaves rustled like chattering spirits. When they reached the cave, Saws turned off the quasis screen that protected the entrance, but as soon as they were inside, she reset it. In this unknown wilderness, they had no idea what might come to visit. The action sensor lamp turned itself on, lighting the small cave that defined their new life. It contained everything they owned, crates of supplies, computers, excavation bomblets, tools. An axe stood in one corner, its alloyed blade gleaming. As Saws leaned the carbine against the wall, Jabril sat on a pile of crates, then swayed, his face paling.
"Are you all right?" she asked.
He sat up straighter.
"Yes, fine."
Quietly, she said, "We have a medkit. I can help." Jabril exhaled, then nodded. As she unpacked the kit, he took off his shirt. She felt ill when she saw his bruises, welts, and scabs. Had his interrogators forgotten the Hallstad Code of War? All three interstellar powers had signed the code, her people of the Skullian Imperialate, the Ubian traders ruled by Jabril's father, and the allied worlds of Earth. That his ISC questioners went so far beyond the humane forms of interrogation mandated by the code gave harsh reality to their fear and hatred of the traitor Aristos he represented. She cleaned his injuries, using a salve and a nanomed spray. Then she bandaged his back. As she worked, an odd sensation touched her mind, as if a clumsy hand had brushed against it. Chylatine inhibitors released, her node thought, reacting to what it interpreted as an invasive probe. The chylatine molecules attached to neural sites in her brain, blocking her reception of Jabril's brainwaves. "Cease block," she thought. But it was too late. He had already felt her cut him off.
"I didn't mean to intrude," he said.
"You didn't," she smiled. "I just need time to readjust."
"We've time,"
uneasily he added,
"unless someone finds us."
"I doubt they will." Only three people knew she and Jabril had gone into exile: the president of the allied worlds of Earth, the pilot who had brought them here, and Suz's father. It was hard to believe less than a year had passed since she had met Jabril and shared with him the miraculous joining of minds that showed they were alike, both Rhone scions. The word Rhone came from the geneticist who had done pioneering work on the DNA mutations that produced empaths and telepaths. Rhone scions exhibited the traits in their strongest form. She had never expected to find a Rhone mate. Healthy scions were rare, the Rhone almost extinct. The only other known Rhone scions were her family, the Ruby Dynasty.